Hi, this is a podcast from Cosmos Magazine, Winter 2017, and it's a commentary podcast, and I'll speak with the actual authors, so the actual publishers, to see that's okay. But at the moment, this is just a rehab podcast, and there's just, say, about 30 or so people who will listen to this, where I should actually just read an article. Last time I decided to read an article about the Copenhagen School, which is rather unfortunate because I knew things about it, and so I couldn't actually just read it. I had to actually comment on it while I was going through. So this article's on page 55. It's a feature. It's called The Final Frontier, and it's, the byline is, "There is no bigger empirical question in astrophysics than how big space is." Oh, okay. Cathal O'Connell provides a brief history of ideas about the size and shape of the universe. That should be good. There's Don't Panic and Space is Big. You just don't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the road to the chemist, but that's just peanuts to space. Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I must admit, I really like that book. I have a picture of just a huge number of galaxies, I think from the NASA Deep Field picture, and they normally have a 101, so they have a description of what it is. No? Okay. So I'll read this to you. "In one sense, the edge of the universe is easy to mark out. It's a distance a beam of light could have travelled since the beginning of time. Anything beyond it is impossible for us to observe, and so outside our so-called observable universe." Beautifully put. That's my comment. "You might guess that the distance from the centre of the universe to the edge of the universe is simply the age of the universe, 13.8 billion years, multiplied by the speed of light, 13.8 billion light years, or gigayears." That's great. Beautifully put so far. "But space has been stretching all this time. Just as an airport walkway extends the stride of a walking passenger, a moving walkway of space extends the stride of light beams." Beautifully put. "It turns out, in the 13.8 billion years since the beginning of time, the light beam could have travelled 46.3 billion light years from this point of the origin to the Big Bang." Beautifully put again. "If you imagine the beam tracing out a radius, the observable universe is a sphere whose diameter is double that, 92.6 billion light years. Since nothing is faster than the speed of light, absolutely anything in principle could have happened outside this observable universe," says, I just got bitten by a bug there, by Andrew Liddell at the University of Edinburgh. It could end and we could have no way of knowing. "But we have good reason to suspect the entire universe, capitalized to distinguish from the merely observable universe," oh, that's beautiful, "the universe and small universe, goes a lot further than that, in part that we can observe, and that it is possibly infinite. So how could we know what goes beyond the observable universe? Imagine a bacterium swimming in a fishbowl. How could it know the true extent of a seemingly infinite world? Well, distortions of light from the curvature of glass might give a clue. In the same way, the curvature of the universe tells us about its ultimate size. The geometry of the universe can be in three different kinds," says Robert Tatrotra, an astrophysicist at the Imperial College of London. "It could be closed like a sphere, it could be open like a saddle, or flat like a table. The closed geometry would mean the universe is finite, while the other two would mean the universe is infinite. A key to measuring the curvature of the cosmic microwave background, CMB radiation, a wash of light given out of the fiery fireball of plasma that pervaded the universe for 400,000... I think that number's wrong. I think... 400,000 years after the Big Bang. I'll just have to remember that. It's your snapshot of the universe when it was very young, about 1,000 times smaller than it is today. I will have to go back and look at that number. But this is why I'm doing this for cardiac rehab, to make sure that I can just go through, make sure I'm not teaching midway and just have a brain fade. Just as ancient geographers once used the curviness of the Earth's horizon to work out the size of our planet, astronomers are using the curviness of the cosmic microwave background at our cosmic horizons to estimate the size of the universe. The key is to use satellites to measure the temperature at different features of the cosmic microwave background. The way these features distort across the cosmic microwave background landscape is used to calculate the geometry. Oh yeah, that's right, 400,000, I'll give that one, 400,000 years. I thought it was 400 million years, it's 400,000 years. I'll give that one back then. I'll actually check that, but I think that's correct. I remember 399 something rather. Okay, that's good, it's less than a million years, a fraction of a million years old. Okay, the way these features distort across the cosmic microwave background landscape is used to calculate the geometry. So determining the size of the geometry of the universe helps us determine what happened right after its birth, Trotter says. Since the 1980s, three generations of satellites have mapped the CMB with ever-improving resolution, generated better and better estimates of the universe curvature. The latest data, released in March 2013, came from the European Space Agency's Planck telescope and has estimated the curvature is completely flat to at least within a measured uncertainty of plus or minus 0.4%. Oh, extreme flatness of the universe supports. Sorry, I'm doing some cardiac rehab trying to cross my legs. Okay, the extreme flatness of the universe supports the theory of cosmic inflation. The theory holds that in a fraction of a second, 10 to the minus 36 seconds to be precise, just after the birth, the universe inflated like a balloon, expanding many orders of magnitude while stretching and flattening its surface feature. That's right. So inflation is the actual universe popping from nothing to the size of a pea. That's the inflation model. It's that batch. People still think inflation's absolutely huge, but it's amazing. Okay. The perfect flatness would mean the universe is infinite, though the plus or minus 0.4 as a margin for error means we can't be sure. It might still be infinite, but very big. Finite, but very big. Using Planck data, Trotter and his colleagues worked out the maximum size of the actual universe would be at least 250 times greater than the observable universe. Minimum size. Okay, that's a new piece of information. The general generation of telescopes should improve on the data of the Planck telescope. Whether they will give us a definite answer about the size of the universe remains to be seen. I imagine we will still treat the universe as very nearly flat and not know well enough to rule out open or closed for a long time to come, says Charles Bennett, head of the new class array of microwave telescopes in Chile. It turns out, owing to the background noise, there are fundamental limits to how well we can ever measure the curvature, no matter how good the telescopes get. In July 2016, physicists at Oxford worked out that we cannot possibly measure the curvature below 0.01%, so we still have a long way to go. Though measurements so far and the evidence of inflation theory has most physicists weighing towards the view the universe is probably infinite. An impassioned minority, however, have a serious problem with that. Getting rid of infinity, the great British physicist Paul Dirac said, is the most important challenge to physics. No infinity has ever been observed in nature, notes Columbia University astrophysicist Yana Levin in her 2001 memoir, How the Universe Got Its Spots. Oh, it's beautiful. Nor is infinity tolerated in a scientific theory. Wow, okay. So how come physicists keep allowing the universe itself maybe infinite? The idea goes back to the founding fathers of physicists. Newton, for example, reasoned the universe must be infinite based on the law of gravitation. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, there's the infinite story of the ancient Greeks and the whole Catholic Church, big problems, and Bruno and all that type of stuff, the ancient Greeks. It held that everything in the universe is attracted to everything else. But if that was so, eventually the universe would be pulled towards a single point. In that way, the stars would eventually collapse under its own weight. This was at odds with his firm belief that this universe has always existed, which is, you know, true. So he figured the only explanation was infinity. An equal pull in all directions would keep the universe static and eternal. Albert Einstein, 250 years later, at the start of the 20th century, see. 250 years later would mean that he's in 1750. That's not correct. It would be 350 years later. Newton, Great Fire of London, 1666. That's 50 plus 350 years later. Okay. Albert Einstein, 250 years later, at the start of the 20th century, similarly envisioned an eternal infinite universe. General relativity and his theory of the universe on the grandest scale plays out on the infinite landscape of space-time. Mathematically speaking, it's easier to propose a universe that goes forever than to have to deal with the edges. Yet to be finite is to be unreal. Infinite is to be unreal. A loop, a high bubble, a hyperbole, an absurdity. In his short essay, The Library of Babel, Argentinian writer Jorge or Georges Louis Borges imagines an infinite library containing every possible book of exactly 410 pages. For every sensible line of a straightforward statement, there are leagues of senseless cacophonies, verbal jumbles and incoherence, because there's only so many possible arrangements of letters, and the possible number of books is limited, so the library is destined to repeat itself. Finite universe leads to similar conclusions. An infinite universe leads to similar conclusions because there are only so many ways atoms can be arranged in space, even in the region of 93 billion light years across. An infinite universe requires that there must be out there another huge region of space identically to us in every respect. This means another Milky Way, another Earth, another version of you and me, another time. Oh, I just. My problem, yeah, I do have problems with that, due to chaos theory and undiagonalizable Hamiltonians. But if they really want to go, physicist Mark Telmach of Massachusetts Institute of Technology has run the numbers. He estimates that in a different universe, patches of space identical to ours it would tend to come around every 10 to the 10 15 meters, an insanely huge number, one with more zeros than there are atoms in the observable universe. Wow, someone's going to really argue with him. So the danger of bumping into your twin self down the shops was, but still, Levin does not accept it. It's arrogance, or logic that makes me believe this is wrong. There is just one of you and me. The universe cannot be infinite. God. Levin is one of the first theorists to approach general relativity from the new perspective. Rather than thinking about geometry, he describes the shape of space. She looked at its topology, the way it was connected. All those assumptions about flat, closed, open universes were only valid for huge spherical universes, she argued. Other shapes could be topologically flat and still finite. Your idea of a donut-shaped universe is intriguing, Homer. Said Stephen Hawking in the 1999 episode of The Simpsons. I may have to steal it. Actually, the show's writers had already stolen the idea from Levin, who published her analysis of a donut-shaped universe in 1998. The donut, she noted, actually had, topologically speaking, a zero curvature because the negative curvature of the inside balanced the outside universe, and they have a beautiful picture of a donut-shaped universe. Okay. The near zero curvature of the CMB is therefore consistent with the donut as with a flat surface. Such a universe, Levin realized, you might cross the cosmos in a spaceship, the way sailors cross the globe, and find yourself back where you started. This idea inspired Australian physicist Neil Cornish, now at the Montana State University, to think about how the very oldest light from the cosmic microwave background might have circumnavigated the cosmos. If the donut universe were below a threshold size, it would create a telltale signature, which Cornish called circles in the sky. Alas, when this CMB data came back from the Wilkinson microwave, the WiMAP, in 2001, no such signatures were found. That doesn't rule out the donut theory entirely, but it does mean that the universe, if a donut, is an awfully big one. Attempts to directly disprove or disprove the infinity of the universe seems to lead us to a dead end, at least with the current technology. But we might do it by interference, Cornish believes. Inflation theory does a compelling job of explaining the key features of a universe, and one of the offshoots of inflation is the multi-universe theory. Again, the inflation theory is getting over that expansion from the size of nothing to a P. It did that faster than the speed of light. Yet, just going back, we have particles moving in the Born approximation, probability envelope, faster than the speed of light, and violating Einstein at the same time. It's kind of theory that if you first hear it seems to have sprung from the mind of a science fiction author indulging in mind-expanding substances. Actually, it was first proposed by an influential physicist André Lind in 1980s. Lind, together with Alan Guth of MIT and Alex Starobinsky at Russia's Landau Institute for Theoretical Physics, is one of the architects of the inflation theory. Guth and Starobinsky's original idea had inflation petering out in the first split second after the Big Bang, which it does. Okay, Lindy, however, had it going on, with new universes sprouting off like an everlasting ginger root. Lindy has since showed the eternal inflation is probably an inevitable part of the inflation model. This eternal inflation of multi-universe is model attractive to Lindy because it solves the greatest mystery of all. Why the laws of physics seem fine-tuned to our existence. Well, this is the anthropogenic theory. The strength of gravity is just enough to allow stable stars to form and burn an electromagnetic star, and nuclear force is just right strength to allow atoms to form, for complex molecules to evolve, and for us to become to be. In each newly sprouted universe, the constants get assigned randomly. In some, gravity might be so strong that the universe collapses. I don't know how they get that. That's a bit hard to understand. But in others, gravity would be weak and the atoms and hydrogen would never condense to form galaxies. With other infinite number of new universes sprouting into existence by chance, one will pop up that is fit for life. The multi-universe theory has its critic, notably author co-founder of the inflation theory, Paul Steinhardt. He told the Scientific American in 2014, scientific ideas should be simple, explanatory, predictive. The inflation in multi-universe is currently understood appears to have none of these properties. Meanwhile, Paul Davies, oh, that's where he's gone, at the University of Arizona, wrote in the New York Times, invoking an infinity of unseen universe to explain the unusual features of one we are doing is just as ad hoc as involving the unseen creator. But in another sense, the multi-universe is a simpler of the two inflation universe. In a few lines of equations or just a few sentences of speech, the multi-universe gives us a mechanism to explain the origin of the universe, just as Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection explained the origin of species. As Max Tegmark put it, our judgment therefore comes down to which we find more wasteful and inelegant, many worlds or many words. To settle the issue, we need to know more about what went on before down in the first split second of the universe. Perhaps gravitational waves will answer a way to hear the vibrations of the Big Bang. Whether infinite or finite, standalone or one of endless multitude, the universe is surely mind-bending space. Which brings us back to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. If there's any real truth, it's that the entire multidimensional infinity of the universe is almost certainly being run by a bunch of maniacs. Beautifully written. Okay, and they've just got the images, detailed the images. It's actually very well done. So that's, thanks for listening.